There's always a risk with entrepreneurship that you're trying something new, breaking through things that necessarily haven't been done. That's the whole magic of it. If you're doing it to gain wealth, fame, or attention, those things will fall apart at some point. In Proverbs 30, that they hoped or prayed to not be in poverty and not to be in riches. In poverty to forsake the Lord, or in riches to forsake the Lord. When we started seeing success with our kids, that was something we prayed for, that the Lord would just keep them at a place of contentment with where they are and not to be pursuing fame or fortune with whatever they're doing. Proverbs 22, it says, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart from it.
Bold visionaries, faithful disruptors. Some call them crazy, but they are called to create. Under His power, for His glory. The Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith-Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. You know, many of us are familiar with the incredible story of Dude Perfect, of how a trick shot led to a ministry, a business, something so much more that has impacted a generation of kiddos that imagine and think differently. We are going to start off by getting a chance to watch that story. But after that, we get to go behind the scenes, kind of behind the scenes, and hear the story from Larry and Diana Cotton. What does it look like as parents to encourage this vision, to encourage these ideas, to encourage the entrepreneurial moment? And so we're going to get to hear their story of how they've been a part of doing with that with their kids and their grandkids, and how we can do the same as we raise our kiddos. Let's go ahead and get started by watching this story.
Now with more on the creator economy, Dude Perfect, the popular sports YouTube group known for their impressive tricks and all those impressive trick shot videos, announcing a significant partnership today. They're receiving an investment ranging from $100 to $300 million. It's a lot of money.
Dude Perfect received $100 million in cash. Now, why would seasoned investors place $100 million in perfectly good cash in five guys that make silly videos?
I clearly remember being a year or two into this whole journey, and I remember being at a restaurant with my family, and I remember like trying to make eye contact with this middle school kid and like looking for validation of if he looked me in the eye and recognized me from being in these new Dude Perfect YouTube videos, that was going to be like a pat on the back for me that what we were doing was meaningful. That to me was like a low point when I remember like snapping out of it and being like, oh man, like that's not a healthy place to be, is needing that validation to feel like I was where God wanted me to be.
You live for their acceptance, you die for the rejection. I think if you live for everyone to love you, as soon as they don't, you're gonna feel like you have no purpose and no worth. As soon as no one is paying attention to you anymore, what's your purpose for living?
In 2009, we are juniors at Texas A&M. We're all roommates. Tyler and Garrett are messing around in the backyard. Ty has just bet Garrett a Jimmy John's sandwich that if he made a hook shot from behind the tree, he gets free lunch. And right before I got home, he nailed it. So they decided to get the camera out to film it to show us when we got back.
Still don't know why we decided to ever film it.
Basketball goal was $80. I remember the price because I was like, man, it's kind of steep.
We were just having fun.
This is the chimney ball.
What did you just hit?
That was how it all started. We loaded it to YouTube, which at the time was legitimately cat videos. It was no one's full-time job. Not like a business game plan, just a way of sharing a video.
I thought it was a one and done. Let's just make the trick shot.
Yes! Yes!
Upload it, see what people think, laugh about it, and move on. And it just caught fire.
The next morning, my brother's phone rings at 5:30 in the morning, which I'm shocked he even answered. But he picked up, and it was Good Morning America. And they said they'd seen the video, and they wanted to play it that morning.
These amazing shots, they are really mouth-dropping shots. But are they real? Are they fake? We have computer analysts looking at them.
So we watched on TV, and we thought that was the end of all of this. So we made another video. They just kept growing. And someone's texting me, it's on Sports Illustrated. And I Googled it. The views skyrocketed more from it being on a website of Sports Illustrated than they did on TV. So once it started hitting some of the blogs, that's when it really started to pick up traction, that very first video. The spike from that video was nothing compared to a few videos later. Again, just for fun, we were having fun, people were watching them. It wasn't crazy numbers of people.
Obviously just for fun, but we put a little bit of time into it so we want people to see it.
GMC reached out. They said, hey, we've seen the trick shots. If y'all had like a bigger budget, are there any ideas you would love to do? And we were like, well, I mean, we're just making it up. We'd love to do a shot out of an airplane. And they said, love that idea. If you can make it, we'll put it in a TV commercial during the NBA Finals and the World Cup. And we're like, that'd be awesome.
This is the airplane shot.
They never say never. Neither do we.
We walk inside the tent and everybody starts clapping as soon as we walk in. And we're like, oh my gosh, this is for us. We're just these college kids. From there was when we felt like, okay, this is, we have a real chance to do stuff that we can actually get paid for. So we graduated from A&M and there were, you know, companies reaching out like GMC had done, looking for different opportunities to feature whatever they were doing. But with five guys, we were barely making ends meet. A couple of the guys got married. We all started new jobs. We were just in different stages of life at the time. A year or two out of school, having done Dude Perfect on the side for a while, I don't think we can do both. My brother and I were driving the 4 hours up from Austin to Dallas every single weekend. The other guys were working their jobs during the week and then filming on the weekend. It was just a lot.
That time of any was the most stressful. While they're eating, breathing, drinking Dude Perfect, we're trying to balance that with also real jobs, also with new families.
We were exhausted. They were exhausted. Their wives were exhausted.
We were about to just pack it up and be done.
And we got to a breaking point where Ty's boss specifically said, hey, if you miss another Saturday to go do Dude Perfect, you're done.
You got to remember, back then, being a YouTuber, making a career out of it was unheard of.
We came together and we're like, hey, if we don't give this a shot now, then there's no chance we'll ever do it in the future.
We basically looked at the bank statement.
We kind of crunched some numbers and said, I think we can pay for food for the next year.
We looked at each other and we were like, let's just do this.
Nobody wanted to be the first one to quit.
Everybody's like, well, are you going to quit? Yeah, I'll quit. Well, are you going to quit? Yeah, no, definitely. And then it's like, nobody was really making any moves.
One by one, each guy officially quit, convinced their father-in-law that it was a smart idea.
Imagine telling your father-in-law you're going to do YouTube as a job with a wife that's his daughter.
Looking back at those really early days, I don't even know how I explained it to people. I remember telling people I'm a YouTuber. Now I tell people that we make family-friendly content and we're striving to be the most trusted entertainment on earth. That's the mission at DP, is to be the most trusted entertainment on earth. I do not think we were thinking about it in that big of a lens for the first 10 years. The business piece for us has definitely grown over the last 15 years. It's morphed, it's changed the whole time. Started out with just the five of us. Each of us had a job and a responsibility. My brother did all the editing. Me and Cody did all the filming. Tyler was all the creative ideas. Garrett was helping on the finances. We've been very involved. And as we've grown, we've slowly handed off responsibilities to the team. And so it is kind of insane how much goes on behind the scenes. We have really tried hard to make stuff that we have fun making and watching, but that young kids can actually enjoy. And I think that is what families have told us, is like, man, that is what is so great about Dude Perfect. My littlest kid has fun with it, and my oldest kid's still excited to watch it.
That's a thing that we all watch.
Yes.
That's an all-in show.
It's honestly, it's so bizarre what's happened that we feel even more confident that God's hand has been on it.
Faith is really the underlying principle and theme behind everything Dude Perfect does.
I think it's easy for people to see all the wins, you know, on the YouTube channel and feel like everything's gravy. There's definitely been a lot of challenges along the way. You're just measured against whatever you just did. You know, we have 15 years now of a high bar of entertainment, and if the next video isn't as good as the last one, it's hard to feel like you lived up to it. I'm not really sure how you manage that emotion apart from Christ. Like, I think the only reason I'm okay with it being compared to that last thing is because I know that's not my actual identity. If that was my actual identity, then I can see why people completely melt down.
If we lost everything tomorrow, doesn't matter. We know that the most important thing we have is Jesus.
I think the tendency with anything in entertainment is just to see it all up and to the right and everything's going perfect. It's just roses. And I think the truth is we've had a really bumpy road. You know, people just don't see the hard times. I had to skip my wife's brother's wedding because we had a tour show and we argued about that for a really long time. You know, there's a lot of things we wish we would have done differently, but we've seen that God can teach you a lot through those. And I don't think there's another way to learn most of those lessons other than through the failures that are part of it. We say that the five of us we're closer than friends, we're more like brothers.
Dude Perfect is the five of us. It's like a family. I mean, it really is. We're brothers. We've been together for 12 years in real life, 10 years as a business.
I think it's probably even closer than that. It's more like a marriage. Anybody who's married knows that you have to keep short accounts. You know, if you let the frustrations pile up over time, then that can end up being all that you see. And so obviously, biblically, we're called to do that. It's also a smart move business-wise, because ultimately our friendship is the business in this case. It'll only be as healthy as the five of us are. It's no secret that it's not really recommended to start a business with friends or family. We feel very confident. Like, God is the only reason we've gotten through that piece of it. Our shared faith is the backbone of why we've been able to manage conflict and get to the other side of some really tough conversations and conflict. And internally, we've termed it sorting yourself. I step over the line saying something in a group setting that I shouldn't have.
Go in.
That's it.
Great.
Five.
No matter how competitive it gets, though, everybody always ends up having fun after some time to cool down.
We will come back to each other later, and I'll be like, hey, man, I'm going to sword myself for that. Like, I didn't handle that well. I want you to know I realize I didn't handle that well. Will you forgive me for that? And I think that's been really big, is keeping short accounts, and especially amongst guys, admitting when you came up short and that you don't want that to be what defines us. Psalms 86:11 says, give me an undivided heart that I may fear your name. And that was one that has always been like front of mind for me. Like, no matter what you're chasing or whatever somebody would pat you on the back from, or a hard day, you know, in an ideal world, it's let your heart be undivided towards me and, you know, I'll show you what's next. I'll say this, because I grew up in the church, this is very personal to me in terms of ministry does not have to be just in vocational ministry. For 30 years, my parents were in ministry, vocational ministry. And so I always assumed to do something that honors God, you have to be in vocational ministry. And I think I just assumed I would do something in actual ministry. That was all that I'd seen. To me, that was the only way you could do something that mattered. And I feel strongly that God has used Dude Perfect, which is a business, for his glory in a way that if I had gone and done vocational ministry, I don't think would have happened. So it's been really cool to watch him do that. 50 years from now, I hope that Dude Perfect is still an encouragement to families. I don't know exactly what it'll look like. You know, we're working really hard to hopefully turn it from just the five of us making some goofy videos to something that'll be a lasting, you know, way for families to flourish. We hope that it's a lasting family brand that is an encouragement day in and day out. And, you know, I don't know if it's possible, but that's the journey we're on right now, is continue to do what we can to serve families in that way.
So this is just a treat. It's a fun conversation for me as a dad of three kiddos. And so I've got a 17, a 14, an 11-year-old at home. And so it is a new season of life. I'm getting used to the fact of like being the first one to go to bed. I was always the last one to go to bed, burning the midnight oil. But it's been a fun season for me to sit there and really see the differences of our kids. You know, I think we just for too long assumed like, oh gosh, same mom, same dad, same school, same things. They're gonna be close enough. But then when we realize it, it's like, oh my gosh, our 17-year-old is so different from our 11-year-old. Speak into that for us. Give us a quick flyover of your kiddos, but then also just say like, when did you start seeing the different strengths of each of them?
So twin boys, Kobe and Corey, and then 4 years later, Catherine comes along, daughter. And so definitely differences between boys and girls. But Kobe and Corey always had a friend. They had a compatriot, a pal, that they were doing stuff together. Catherine was more, a little bit more on her own. But we began to see the differences really emerge early on in elementary school for sure. Boys were into sports. They wanted to play games, have fun, invent new games. They were just doing crazy stuff. And Catherine was sketching and drawing and actually drawing little girls with different outfits on. And the boys end up going into entertainment and gaming and all that stuff with Dude Perfect. And Catherine goes into fashion design at Baylor and then to her own watercolor business and as an artist.
So what's the first story? Is there a moment like when like there's a like Catherine writes on the table, the boys are out there playing? Is there a story? Is there a fun moment where you just kind of like, I can see something? Like we always talk about having eyes to see. Is there that story or that moment that you think about childhood that like really embodies the boys or Catherine?
I think about Catherine, she would draw on the church bulletin or, you know, or the napkin or anything. And she did this really cute picture of our dog. We had a little white dog, Gracie. And I mean, it was just like, it was exactly Gracie, you know. And then when she was in high school, she had a teacher, Mr. Miley was his name, and he was her history teacher. And she did a drawing of him, and it looked just like him. And I'm like, okay, you know, that's this is just a pattern of who she is and what she loves doing. And she's very just very artistic and creative and just thinks that way. And the boys were totally different.
We had a fairly small backyard, but we put pavers down and a basketball goal. And so they were dribbling and playing ball against each other all the time and had fun doing that. But then they started tossing the ball up on the roof and letting it bounce three times and then try to get it into the basket.
Okay.
And so they were, I mean, right out of the gate early in probably junior high, they were doing tricks. And I think about that and just their energy and excitement. Whenever we played family games, they were totally into it, but then they would do some twist on it or put some new idea in the game. And so whether it was a card game or whether we were just doing competition, I would toss this soft frisbee to them. And then they tried to get me to throw it and hit them, and they would dodge it. So they were we were doing dodge frisbee for a while. And it's just that sort of thing on and on and on.
So what we're saying is if there's a frisbee trick that we see now, we know the source?
It pretty much is me. Yeah.
Okay.
It's coming from dad.
You know, as a dad, we got to take credit for
something. We do. I don't mind.
So when you've got boys like that, like, and they're doing some of the similar things, kids same ages, they don't often always have to be even twins. But when did you start kind of like noticing the unique differences of them? Because as we filmed it with them before, they'd talk about maybe one is more a little bit entrepreneurial, one's more a little bit video side. When did you start to see the differences in between the boys?
Kobe showed the typical firstborn traits of being responsible and being a little more organized and that kind of thing, even when he was young. And Corey was more the inventor and the idea, the entrepreneur idea. What if we did this instead of this? How would this work, Dad, if I thought about we should invent something? And so we would have those kind of conversations. And then Corey was interested in actually videoing and using video equipment and editing software. When they got to high school, they did a little video with Catherine and Gracie, our dog, and Corey videoed it and edited it together. And so he had a little of that technical and interest in those things. And I think those were some of the early things we noticed. And I would say that for kids that are close, twins for sure, somebody reminded us or challenged us, do not create competition between them, but get them cheering one another on. And so that was a big deal for us, and we just tried to reinforce that. You're not competing, and people would just naturally go, who's better at basketball, Kobe or Corey? Or they would ask them, who's better at math, you or your brother? And we would just reinforce to say, well, Kobe's really good at math, but Corey's really good at this. And just kind of reinforce their unique gifting rather than one's better than the other.
When you think about that and you think about those journeys, when's the point that you think about creative, you think about video, you think about having fun with family games? Gosh, it's easy now to say, wow, that was like the seeds of a career. That's the seeds of something. When did you start to see like, hey, this is more than just a hobby. This is more than just a conversation. This might be something. Is it when you start seeing them exercise this and you think, oh, this could be in vocational ministry and in youth group and in camps? And when does your mind start racing as a parent where you start to see kind of those dots connect?
They loved going to camp, and they loved doing things at church. Kobe and Corey and Catherine, but Kobe and Corey specifically loved Awana, and they were competing and doing the competitions and the games, and they showed a real interest in that. And then once they got into more organized sports, they were 100% into that. I think it affected us as parents thinking, what would they be good at? And our mindset was definitely camp, church ministry, youth ministry, that kind of thing. They responded very well to their youth leaders, and they were just all in. And that would be true with Kobe, Corey, and Catherine, and just very much at home in that. And so naturally, in my mind, because Diane and I both were doing student ministry when we first came out of college, we thought that's likely that they would do that. They're wired and gifted to do that. They're fun-loving, and they would be good in that kind of ministry role.
So the boys made a good choice with A&M, but Catherine made the best choice by picking Baylor. Yes. So they go to school, they're processing through it as they're getting to that point of graduating. Like, just talk about just kind of the journey in college. Like, what did they all want to be when they grew up at that time?
I think Catherine, I'll speak to for her. She did love fashion design. And so she went to Baylor because that had a really good design program. And she learned a lot about apparel design and sewing and everything. But she took a class, one class that she took was drawing, was
just fashion illustration.
Fashion illustration, yes. And so she just realized, oh, I really loved that class.
Yeah.
And so when she graduated, instead of going toward the apparel design, actual hands-on creating apparel, she really wanted, she started doing drawing. And her one of her friends said, you should draw. I've been looking everywhere for a picture of my sister's wedding gown. You should draw a wedding gown for her. Her and I could give it to her as a gift. And so I was in the car when they talked, and I remember Catherine was like, oh, I would love to do that. And so that's kind of how her business started. She started doing wedding gowns and drawing them. And then...
Isn't it amazing how you can trace it back to like one class? That,
yes.
Like we look at this four-year experience, and I mean, I think about this negotiation and conflict resolution kind of class I took, where the first day they said, hey, go negotiate the best, you know, improvement that you can on your credit card or any your cell phone bill or whatever it was. And I was like, wait a second. I thought those things were like set. I didn't know that you could like negotiate through that. And it's like you point back to that class.
One thing.
Uh-huh. Not the 4 years, but the one class inside of it.
Yeah, that just sparked your interest or just made you come alive. You know, I love doing this.
Yeah.
And so she started doing that. And then when she would give it to someone, I remember going to a baby shower and she gave a picture of the mom with a stroller. And when she opened the gift, she just started crying, the girl did. And it's like, that was like, it just showed something she has, some gift she has is moving someone else's heart. And so she started doing that full time. So it was cool.
Corey took a class in high school on video editing. And I think that planted a seed. He really liked it. But then they both were not math and science oriented, and so they went into communications at A&M, and that gave them the opportunity to learn both how to communicate and write and that sort of thing, but also lots more people interaction. And I think that shaped them, and it fit with their fun-loving personality side. And so it still had the potential of them doing church ministry or youth ministry or some kind of camp or something like that. And they both attended Kanakuk as campers and then as counselors. And that also reinforced during those college years their interest in having fun with other kids and doing those kind of activities. So we didn't really have their... in terms of our minds or with the boys, have a career path mapped out. Really, we saw some giftedness, and then the Dude Perfect or the video that they did in college and the Dude Perfect thing popped up. And that sort of took on a life of its own.
So most parents, when they call home, or most kiddos, when they call home, you know, they fill in about their week, like, hey, mom and dad, it's a great week. I went to the football game. This happened. My classes are going well. Maybe I've met this girl. But most people don't wake up and all of a sudden see their kids on Good Morning America. What's that morning like when all of a sudden you see that? And what are some of the first thoughts?
They emailed, I think both of us, but they called me and I was at the office at church. And they go, Dad, we made this video, and we're going to put it on YouTube, and we're going to get 1 million views. And we were used to them having, you know, crazy ideas, but I'm like, oh, no, you did what? And so I looked at the video, and they're on top of the house. And so being a dad, I'm like, you're ruining the shingles on the house. It's like, we're going to have to pay for this. And of course,
today we just call that a prop and equipment expense. But
exactly today. But it was. I was like, guys, this is really funny. It's really cool. But it's about 2 weeks before exams. Y'all need to focus.
Yeah.
You know? Don't lose track of what's going on. And that video, they posted it, and it got a lot of views. I don't know if you would. What is viral back then in 2009, but somebody called them from Good Morning America and they wanted to show it that the end of that week or early the next week, something. Mm-hmm. And so they called us to tell us and to make sure we recorded it on our DVR. And and they ended up showing the video, but not interviewing them. They were going to talk to them over the phone, and that didn't work out. But it definitely propelled the idea. And that was in the spring of 2009. And so then that motivated them to go do another edition of the trick shots.
So at that moment, I mean, it's a fun story. I mean, that's got to be a fun moment. Everybody's kind of like, we all want to get on the Jumbotron at a football game, let alone getting on YouTube on a video.
Yeah.
When's that moment where, as parents, you started to say, like, hey, you have a unique seat. There's so much in the emotion. You probably are too. But there's a moment where you're seeing, like, hey, this is more than just something. This is more than a moment. What's happening here? What's that like for you guys as a couple as you're, you know, walking through this with them?
Yeah, I think we, you know, we saw some, they got some airtime and attention on that. And then after that, they did another big shot. And then, you know, something else would happen and we'd be like, okay, that's really, that's so cool. That's really fun. But that's all. And then they'll go on and do something else. And we just kept thinking, okay, that, you know, that was cool while you're in college, but then now something else is going to happen. You're going to go on. And we just kept seeing God just keep opening doors and keep using what they were doing. And it was like, okay, well, God must have something bigger for this than we ever dreamed of, you know?
Mm. The sequence helped with that, I think, because they were junior year, right in April or May, the first video. Then they did a second version at the end of May, sometime after school was out. And then they went all to different camps, or Kobe and Corey did Campus Crusade summer projects. Mm-hmm. And so they were dispersed through the summer of their junior year. And they did a little video, and while they were in those different locations and camps, and they came back and they put together a summer camp edition or something. Mm. But it was during that time they were beginning to get a lot of followers. And so it looked like there was something there, but they didn't really know what. We didn't know what. Mm. And they came back in August and did the Kyle Field shot. And that was, you know, off the third deck of Kyle Field, longest basketball shot ever, whatever they called it. And that took that. That is the video that really took off.
Yeah.
And we were just kind of watching and going along for the ride, and I was still cautioning them because Kyle Field is sacred ground at A&M. And they called me and said, Dad, we're going to get to go film at Kyle Field. We're taking our truck onto the track.
Yeah.
And I just, my blood ran cold. I was like, oh, my goodness. If y'all mess up something in Kyle Field, you're going to be in so much trouble. And it was just that kind of caution, plus them going for something crazy and big. And the Lord opened all these doors. I mean, Kyle, the people at A&M let them on the field. I mean, I can't even imagine such a thing. And then they made it. And probably the funniest story was we were going with Catherine to look at colleges, and we were in North Carolina and had traveled on the airplane from Dallas to Raleigh. And phones were off, turn them back on, and their phones are blowing up when they get to the airport in Raleigh. Mm. And I mean, just like going crazy. And we found out that they had picked up the Kyle Field shot and put it on SportsCenter Top 10.
Hmm.
And so it was very surreal. We were sitting in a pizza place in Raleigh together as a family, and SportsCenter was on the TV, and we saw our kids shooting the Kyle Field shot on TV. And they didn't even travel back with us from Raleigh to Dallas. The early morning show, CBS, reached out to them, and they flew from Raleigh to New York to be on that show that weekend.
And you guys went back?
And and we went back to Dallas, and it was crazy. The other thing that I remember soon after that was the Catalyst Conference in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
Reached out to them and said, we want you to share your story. Because they were talking about their walk with Christ, but also this viral video thing on YouTube. And so early, and that was probably September of that year. So early on, they get all this attention, but they have opportunities to merge or to talk about their faith.
Faith-driven entrepreneur for teens. You want your teen to pursue success and live with significance. But in a world fueled by greed and self-promotion, they need a better story than what social media sells. Here's the good news. There's a growing movement of faith-driven entrepreneurs using business to solve real problems, serve others, and point to God in every decision. In Faith-Driven Entrepreneur for Teens, Kobe Cotton, Lecrae, and David Platt take students on a global journey, spotlighting real builders in media, tech, real estate, music, and more. In partnership with Pat Lencioni's Working Genius, students discover their God-given strengths, expand their imagination, and spark conversations about life beyond high school. Help your teen dream bigger and build a life of purpose. Learn more about Faith-Driven Entrepreneur for Teens. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneurforteens.org.
I want to come back to that. I think that's a good place to like hit a pause button. I want to come into your story because I think this is a fun transition moment. Give everybody a flyover of, from a vocational sense, like where has God had you guys as a couple?
Yeah. You want me to go?
Mm-hmm.
We both went on staff with Campus Crusade out of college. Diane went to UT. I went to North Carolina State, had student movements there and individuals that really discipled both of us in college as students. For me and for Diane, it made such a difference because it was an opportunity for us to really know Christ in a very personal way, to understand the basics of the gospel and to learn how to communicate that to other people. And those individuals had helped shape me so much. And I wanted to do that same thing. I'd always wondered a little bit about vocational ministry and church ministry, but it never had really a clear definition until we went through the training and the opportunities with Campus Crusade. And so I decided to join staff. Diane was a year ahead. She had already joined staff and we met at a conference. But I remember prior to going to that first conference where we met, the vision that individuals like Bill Bright and others cast about making a difference in the world for eternity and letting your life count for something more than just accumulating stuff here or becoming famous or whatever. And that captured my heart, and I know it did with Diane as well. And so that was in that those seeds and those reasons were what caused us to go into vocational ministry. And it was a real desire to take what we had learned and pass it on to others and make sure that they are thinking the kingdom of God, who Jesus is, the gospel, and the eternal things that will last way beyond what we do in our lifetime here. So that really captured our heart. And I think we went on staff with Crew and did that for 15 years. That's when our children were born. And kind of as three chapters for us, 15 years with Crew, then 15 years in church ministry in the Woodlands, and then another 15 after that, which included time in Austin doing church work there, and then moving up to Frisco, and I did 3 years of real estate in the midst of that, and then we jumped back in to church work here in the Frisco area. And so our journey has been very much parachurch and church ministry for the last 45 years.
Yeah. It's been a fun thing of seeing like what God's doing. There's these conversations that I think it's important that we say that this not an either or, that there's right. not like a hierarchy of things. It's going to either be what it is now or get even rearranged. But like whether it's in church ministry or whether it's in entrepreneurship, both are ministry.
Yeah.
And I think there's a fun moment that's happening just across the board where people are waking up to that. The church is coming alive to that conversation and seeing all these men and women that are in their church saying, gosh, there's a way to affirm and encourage, because they walk into places in conversations and opportunities that many people don't get a chance to. What was that like for you guys? And Diana, I'd love for you to jump in with this. As you've seen the boys, as you see Catherine kind of stepping into this moment, you know the ministry that you guys have come from together. When's that moment where you saw, wow, these are platforms of ministry that God mm-hmm. is giving our kiddos?
Mm-hmm. I think that was very real to me. It was like seeing, because it was a different path than we took, but seeing how Catherine had opportunities. You know, she did the celebration. She did different shows. She did just even interacting with people through her business, had opportunities to meet people that I would never have met or had influence with. And then same with the boys, you know, they were interacting with organizations that were secular, but they were able to keep their convictions strong on what they were going to advertise, what they really believed in, what they were, you know, how they were going to present themselves. And it just gave them great opportunities to show Christ to a lost world. Mm. So, yeah.
Mm. I think we were very much trained and challenged to give our lives, the most of our time during the week into ministry activity and being able to focus on doing discipleship and evangelism and helping others know Christ and to take the largest number of hours during the week and be able to focus on that. And the way we saw it unfold was Campus Crusade trained you and gave you the opportunity to raise support. So our funding was provided by people so that we could spend a large amount of time during the week doing evangelism, discipleship, and whatever. Mm. The challenge there was good for us, and we both followed that calling, but it's clear to me that the opportunity for people to do ministry in the business world and in the marketplace is just as natural and just as important. And I do think there's been a resurgence of understanding around that. Mm-hmm. Tim Keller wrote Every Good Endeavor. Yeah. There are dozens of other books out there that are like that, but it began to help those who are in doing ministry full time to mm-hmm. see and to understand, and most importantly, to reinforce mm-hmm. that everyone who is involved in kingdom work, sharing Christ, getting to know people, or whether they're in the marketplace or not, they're called to be salt and light to those around them mm-hmm. and to help others and to build up others and to do good in all of these different environments. And yeah. Martin Luther talked about it in the Reformation, that the milkmaid could be doing God's work. And then many, many others have reinforced that. I think the church did not necessarily do a great job with it when we were coming along, but that there is a real understanding and a favor and a encouragement around that now. And that is super encouraging to me mm-hmm. to be able to tell the guy or the gal in marketplace work that their ministry is equally important. There's really no difference between secular and sacred. There's not a divide there.
Yeah. It's been a fun journey. I mean, you guys are getting a front row seat to this, of like what you've lived and then another generation is stepping into. I think there's something special about the conversation you were talking about with SportsCenter and Catalyst, or one of the shows in Catalyst, because those deep formative moments at a young age, whether it's a class that you take or you talk about Catherine's class mm-hmm. at school, like getting a chance to share your why and share your faith mm-hmm. early on in that journey. To me, it's like when somebody shares like a commitment they have towards generosity. Mm-hmm. If you share that publicly with your company, you're kind of on the hook for it for a long time for people to know like, hey, you've made this public. Like when you think back to those moments, like how important was things like Catalyst and other things where it was like, now it's kind of second nature for the guys to share their faith on tour, for them to see that as ministry. How important were those early opportunities mm-hmm. to say some things publicly that kind of like puts your position out there of like, here's where we're coming from?
I think it was very important and very formative. The boys had opportunities even in high school to talk about their faith in a just a secular environment at school. And I think we were taught, and I believe we made an effort for the kids, the boys and Catherine, to see themselves as missionaries wherever they are. Mm. And that word usually is connected with going into a foreign country, into a language you don't know, and that kind of thing. But the idea of being a missionary in the marketplace really is you're going into a culture that maybe doesn't know about Christ or doesn't understand who he is or what he's really done, and you're adopting their language, whatever it is, in the marketplace to explain something and bring the message to people in a environment where it's a little bit unexpected, actually. Yeah. And that is a good thing because people are paying attention. And we saw the boys doing that in high school. They did some in college. But then the platform with YouTube and the platform Catherine had with watercolor really gave them a chance to step out even more and to say some things and do some things. And I'm sure they were nervous about it. We were very nervous, but also very proud that they would now they're owning their faith and they're taking the opportunities that are before them. I think I jotted down, they call what Catherine and what Kobe and Corey are doing in social media, they're called influencers, right?
Yeah.
Well, John Maxwell used to say leadership is influence. Mm. And that's what they're doing. They're actually just leading the conversation, whether it's around fun or the skill of doing YouTube or the videos or art, but they're actually leading in the conversation around here's what motivates us, the why behind it. We love God and we love other people, and that's what Christ has commanded us to do. Mm. One of the questions that the boys get a lot is, how do y'all stay together and not get in arguments, five different guys? And they always take it back to, well, it's because we have a similar faith and our faith calls us to love and to be honest and to forgive one another. Mm. And that's a very natural question to be asked and a very natural answer. And it has it's truly kept them together.
Mm-hmm. I remember too, like early on, they filmed each one of them telling their testimony and put it on their website, like right from the beginning. So it was like, this is who we are. Yeah. And you know that, and then Catherine did the same thing, put her testimony and her faith on her website. Mm. And so that like sets it up immediately that this is who we are, this is what we stand for, and this is our faith is very important to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that I loved that they did that.
Yeah. Once you've stated that why, and again, it just says who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps kind of, it's, in some ways, it's a post of kind of like grounding your identity.
There's
certainly deeper things in scripture and our identity internally, but some of those external things kind of plant a flag that is easy in the midst of things for everybody to know where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about that, I mean, entrepreneurship, we often talk about, it's a lonely journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got, especially when you think about art, you know, oftentimes that's a solo thing. You think about going on tour, everybody thinks it's just one big party. And it's unique that you have five people, but there's elements, I would imagine, that it's just the personal and what's out there. There's a loneliness to it. Talk about just kind of how you've seen your kids just walk through just the loneliness that can be of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I think it is very lonely, because especially for Catherine, because she was doing it by herself.
Mm-hmm.
The boys had kind of a team, but she was doing it by herself. And so she would spend hours kind of isolated creating the art, which she had to do that. But it was, we've seen all of them work really hard and really long hours and put a lot of time into it. And I think as a parent, you don't want them to have to work that long. You don't want them to have to work that hard.
Yeah.
But I just saw, like with Catherine, because she was by herself, she listened to hours of Tim Keller's podcasts and, you know, teaching. And it was like, you just see how God even uses that, because even though she's by herself, she just learned so much because she was by herself and she could listen and do her art. So I think for her, that was probably would be one of the things that I felt like that was a lonely road, because she had to do everything. She had to do the marketing, the business, the technology, you know, everything, not just her art, but everything else that goes along with an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And anybody who is one knows how much work that is. It's a lot.
You're bootstrapping and you're one man show. You know, you just got to figure it out. The boys, I think there was loneliness as they got started, and each guy had different opinions, and so you had to learn that you can still hold your opinion, and you might feel lonely in that you're the only one that thinks that way, but they learned how to merge that. And then I think Kobe and Corey shared some unique loneliness because they were running things for the first year, while the other guys were getting married and had other side jobs. So they generated enough income for Kobe and Corey to pay rent, and they stayed with us for about a year right out of college. And so they were figuring things out, but they were by themselves doing the work and driving back and forth from Austin, where we were living, to Dallas every weekend. And they did that, like, I don't know, 14 to 18 weeks in a row. And it was weekends up here and then doing the stuff at home. And Corey had on, we tried to get him to wear headphones. Most of the time he was just editing out loud in our room, and we could hear
a little bit louder than the basketball on the roof. Yeah. From a kid, it was you're saying.
All the yelling of "we made the shot," and he would run it back and forth 100 times because he was trying to edit.
Yeah.
And so there was definitely those kind of things that they went through early on. And just the, you know, you go into it for 8, 9, 10 months and you go, is this really going to make it?
Yeah.
So there's all those isolation feelings around, is this really going to make it, or have I just wasted a year or 2 years? And I think there's no way that every entrepreneur doesn't experience that.
Yeah. When you look back as parents, just life is fast. Like, again, the season of life that we're in, we're trying to keep telling ourselves, just like, slow down the speed, absorb it, just take it in. We, no matter how many times people tell you these are the good old days, we know that they're the good old days, right?
Yeah.
But when you look back at that, and then you look at the moment where all your kiddos are right now, like, what are the advice that you would give to entrepreneurs? Like, I hear the story and I hear the, you know, hey, that video's great, but finals are coming up. Hey, that video's great, but, you know, what comes next after the degree? Like, what are those words of encouragement that you would give to parents that maybe they're seeing something in their kid and it's not going to fit the traditional path? It's not going to check all the boxes and the 10-point checklist. What encouragement would you give to parents in that moment to speak words into their kids?
It's good.
Yeah, I think just realizing that God is writing their unique story. And so just to encourage them to see, you know, their uniqueness and as a parent, just to come along, I think we really tried to and loved doing it, being a part of it with them. I remember driving Catherine around, and she would go into stores and show them her wedding dresses and ask if they would put them up. And we went to downtown Dallas, and Neiman Marcus put her dress in their bridal boutique. And it was just, you know, we were just, it was a blast because we got to do that together. And
we helped do booths.
We did booths, you know, at shows, and we were just in there with her and with them, not knowing what was going to happen, but they were excited about it, and we wanted to be excited with them. And so just to know that, you know, it's not our story, and it's God's story, and he's writing it, and he's creating it through them, and just to be in it with them and enjoy and encourage and cheer them on no matter what we think about it.
Yeah, I think we were taught in parenting conferences and different places that we were trained that, number one, our kids are a gift, and to see them as arrows, and you're launching them out into the world. And if you're shooting an arrow, there's at some point you release it, and that's when it can fly. And I think that imagery helped us a lot. And I would encourage parents to see them. God's writing the story. God's going to take them on a flight. It is our responsibility to train them up. And in Proverbs 22, it says, train up a child in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart from it. Well, that means according to their bent. And it's what we talked about earlier. You start seeing the way that this child or this individual is wired. And to be able to reinforce that and be a cheerleader for it is what that verse talks about, that if you reinforce and train them in that, they're not going to depart from that. And they're gonna do well. I think the other in Proverbs 30, the writer says that they hoped or prayed to not be in poverty and not to be in riches. In poverty to forsake the Lord, or in riches to forsake the Lord. And I know that when we started seeing success with our kids, that was something we prayed for, that the Lord would just keep them at a place of contentment with where they are, and not to be pursuing fame or fortune with whatever they're doing. And I think there's always a risk with entrepreneurship that you're trying something new, you're doing something on your own, you're plowing new ground, and you're breaking through things that necessarily haven't been done. That's the whole magic of it. But if you're doing it to gain wealth, or you're doing it to gain fame or attention, those things will fall apart at some point. And so there needs to be a higher and a more long-term purpose behind it. And just to be able to cheerlead them on, but to be able to reinforce those things as they go along.
I think that's such a beautiful thing, like staying in that tension, right? Like so oftentimes we get in those tense moments and we want to escape them. We want to work our way out of them.
Yep.
I'm reminded as you're talking about that passage, like of the conversation we had with Francis Chan recently about that same thing. It's like, yeah, don't give me either of these streams. Keep me in this place. And like where this moment where there's a morning that starts with gratitude but ends with exhaustion, knowing that like,
yeah, that's good.
It's you're in it all the time. And like, but when we get from the lines, when we get too comfortable, destruction happens. On the other side of it, destruction happens. Like, but to live in that tension. I think that's such a hard thing for me, both as an individual, but also as a parent, because you just want to come in and fix it.
Right.
And you want to help them get out of it when you realize, man, actually time multiplied intention is going to be some of the greatest tools of learning for them.
It's so good. And the boys learned, lessons through going through hard stuff. Catherine did too. Letting them learn as parents is hard. But situations like that, somebody said, it's not a problem to solve, but a tension to manage. And helping them understand that, but also as parents, not to get in and try to fix it, but just to help them manage it and walk through it with them and help them see that God is still in charge here, and he's writing the story, and he's got this, and there's an opportunity on the other side if we wait on him and we just walk in faith and keep our eyes on him.
Amen. Guys, thank you for sharing. Thank you for the authenticity of just sharing fun stories, but also just the journey that you're on, because I think a lot of us as entrepreneurs, we're busy, and sometimes, if we're honest, we're sometimes more focused in on what's happening in the office, and we can be better at that than we can be of bringing that same intentionality at home. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you for also the perspective of saying, like, hey, ministry has so many different faces.
Yep.
And as we think about kids or even grandkids, like just this idea of that ministry, it's more about that why, it's more about the intentionality. It's not just one where, it really is something to be found everywhere. So thank you for being with us.
Yes.
Thanks for having
us.
Well, friends, you know that we always like to leave you guys with the next step. We don't want to just hype this conversation up and just leave you short of something to do. So here's my encouragement. We created this course, Faith-Driven Entrepreneur for Teens, really just to spark conversations between parents and kiddos to say, just explore this redemptive imagination. And so you're going to get to see the Dude Perfect story in that. You're going to get to go around the world to see people in all different places using the gifts that God has given them, wherever they are, to make a difference. And so I hope that you can find a moment. Maybe it's a morning thing that you do with your kiddos, something on the weekend. Maybe it's something that they do on their own and then come back to you and talk about. But you're going to see some things here on the screen, codes that you can get free access to all of these resources, all of these tools that we just hope spark meaningful missional conversations that can put them like an arrow on a great trajectory of where God has them going. So great to be with you. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Come for content, stay for community. Join a faith-driven entrepreneur group online or in person. No cost, no catch. Visit faithdrivenentrepreneur.org. That's faithdrivenentrepreneur.org.